Thank you for joining us for ACT, No Matter What, the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona podcast. And now, your host, Ethan Cox, Director of Development.
Hello and welcome to the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona ACT, No Matter What podcast. So excited to have you here today for our second podcast for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona. And we have a really great guest that we're going to be talking with, Representative Andreas Cano. Andreas represents the 3rd Legislative District in the Arizona House of Representatives. Raised by a single mom, Andreas, 28, saw a path for advancement in Arizona's public schools. He is a first-generation college graduate. In 2012, Andreas accepted a position as a senior aide to Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias in Tucson, Arizona, and he became the youngest policy advisor in the county's history, overseeing the supervisor's constituent outreach and neighborhood relations. 6 years later, in 2018, Andreas, a Democrat, was elected to the Arizona House Representatives. Representative Cano sits on the House Committee on Ways and Means and the House Committee on Natural Resources, Energy, and Water. And finally, in full disclosure, Andreas and I have been friends for many years, and he currently works part-time for the LGBTQ Plus Alliance Fund, for which I also serve on the board. Welcome, Andreas.
Thank you, Ethan. It's so good to hear your voice. I did not realize that you were Ira Glass 2.0, but we're super, super grateful to have you at Planned Parenthood, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you. And I imagine, you know, nowadays it's a handy thing to have multiple talents. So, rumor has it that the 2020 election is over and decided. However, there are several new bills that have been introduced in the state Congress masquerading as preventing voter fraud, which would actually seek to limit voter access. Of the many bills that have been introduced, which do you think is the most harmful? And do any of these bills actually stand a chance of becoming law in Arizona?
Sure. Well, thanks again, Ethan. And I want to first begin by saying that I'm so grateful to the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona for leading the way to get us to where we are today. 31 Republicans, 29 Democrats in the State House, 16 Republicans, 14 Democrats in the State Senate, 2 Democratic U.S. Senators, and of course, the support that you give by having a strong connection with the candidates who are running, who are stepping up to run for office. I think you have changed our political landscape in Arizona for the better, because ultimately what we need right now is good government and good direct support, especially as we all try to understand what the world looks like from a pre-COVID-19 perspective, during the pandemic, and of course after. And going back to the question, I think the fact that we are still stuck 3 months after the November 2020 election, trying to figure out how we're going to navigate these baseless voter fraud claims, I think is just a terrible travesty more than anything, Ethan. We have 15 county recorders who ran good elections that were secure, that were transparent and observed by independent party watchdogs, and this notion that there was anything but a good election, I think, is just ridiculous. And you know, I want voters to vote. I think the fact that we have legislation in front of us that is talking about voter suppression and hindering voters from voting, such as, you know, 22 other states in Arizona, in the country, in the United States, having a policy that allows same-day voter registration, and Arizona trying to explicitly prohibit that. I mean, shouldn't we be talking about voter expansion instead of suppression? The fact that most Arizonans are voting by mail now, and some of the restrictions that we see in the 2021 legislature are for a public notary to sign your ballot that you receive by mail before it counts. I mean, this is the kind of backwards thinking, you know, to where I want us to focus on good public schools, good healthcare, protecting women, ensuring that folks have meaningful jobs. We're continuing this notion of the majority party at the legislature by saying that this 2020 election was rigged. I just don't get it, Ethan.
Yeah, I hear you about that. On that same topic, you know, there's an old saying that says a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. And that just seems to be truer than ever. What do you think that you and other elected officials can do to combat what seems to be just an increasingly horrific problem right now?
Well, you know what I think frustrates my colleagues on the majority side, Ethan, is when I just kind of let facts speak for themselves, right? When I talk to folks in Arizona, in my district in Southern Arizona, they're talking about getting by, right? And you know, you mentioned this. I was raised by a single mom in public housing. To this day, my mom still works two jobs to make ends meet. And anytime I think about the policies that I am advocating for at the Capitol, I do it from the perspective of those close to me and those conversations that I have at doorsteps. The fact that we spend more money in Arizona sending people to prison than we do on our three state universities combined is a problem. We have a pandemic that taught us the importance of preparing our workforce, having good jobs with good benefits, and this legislature has refused to fund our local Pima Community College system and Maricopa Community College's system since 2015. So we're now on 5 years of no direct support to the ongoing operations of the two largest community colleges that can help us all. And you'll see it in the debates that we have in committee and on the House floor with our colleagues. What they'll like us to say is, yes, but we also did this. And it's just like, no, we're talking about plain dollars, plain fact versus fiction, which is we have not been doing our best to invest in the quality programs that will help us all be good, not only, you know, good citizens that contribute to our local economy, but we to a day where a mom like mine isn't going to have to worry where her next meal is going to come from, or if she's going to have enough hours this week to be able to pay her rent next month. I mean, this is the reality that we're talking about. And it's why Planned Parenthood, I think, needs to continue holding all of our candidates and our elected leaders accountable to say, let's do better.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that connection to a good education and having an informed and analytical population plays a lot into, I think, combating some of the misinformation that's going around. So I agree with you. Education is absolutely where it starts.
Yeah. And you know, we can go on and on about how our schools have been underfunded. You know, the fact that we're picking and choosing what we're teaching our kids. I was able to be introduced to the Planned Parenthood family through, I think, this notion that our kids, our teenagers in our public schools ought to have the best comprehensive health education that they need. And sex ed, you know, is not just about what I think the opposition would say. It's about what's a healthy relationship with or a friend, right? How do we teach the power dynamics of what's right and what's, I mean, these are not things that have to be construed as we're trying to paint this picture that is so vilifying of what our kids should or should not be doing. We just want them to have access to the most medically accurate, best information that they can possibly have. I don't know why that has to be divisive, because more than anything, I think what you get are caring, informed young adults to be the best that they can be, and they ought to have all the information at their disposal to be able to fly free in this world and trust that they can go to a place that is safe and that is meant to support them rather than work against them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So just, you know, pivoting a little bit, I know you're passionate about protecting reproductive health care and abortion access in Arizona, and thank you for that. I'm sure you know there remains on the books several zombie laws, which would criminalize abortion care in Arizona if Roe v. Wade were overturned. What, if anything, can you do as part of the minority party to change or get rid of these types of laws?
Well, I think it's clear that the majority is focused on keeping these laws on the books. And I think what I commit myself to in my time at the legislature, if my voters send me back for the remaining 6 years that I have, is to send a clear message that there are legislators who are on the side of women making their own reproductive health care decisions. But also, you know, as we question the future of what the law of the land is going to be with our Supreme Court and Roe Wade, I think we have to recognize, what does that mean for, you know, the trickle-down effect to Arizona women? And what I mean by that is that this legislature for decades has been an anti-woman legislature that has more than anything gotten in the way of us being able to provide quality health care to women. That ultimately is a travesty, because when we're talking about the different geographics of our state, for instance, when a clinic has to be shut down, a brick and mortar clinic has to be shut down to be able to provide things like, I don't know, birth control, mammograms, you know, x-rays for women, and abortion care. When a woman and a person in Yuma has to make a decision to go to Phoenix or to a nearby California city to be able to get access to quality health care, that just kind of tells you where our priorities are not correct. They're right. Not aligned. And I think, you know, going back to the Wild West story of locking people up for abortion care or for any kind of access that, you know, would we be having this conversation, Ethan, if that said individual was a man? I don't think we would. And so I, you know, it's like, why can't we just trust people to be good stewards of their own health care? And I think that's our argument. We're not asking for these huge things that can't be provided. We're asking for equity. We're asking for fairness. And more than anything, I think we all benefit from a healthcare system that is protected, that is there as a resource whenever somebody needs our support.
Yeah, I think people forget that a lot of times people aren't asking for additional benefits or any sort of rights above and beyond what everyone else has. They're just asking to be taken up to the same rights as everyone else has. And I think that gets confused.
I think it gets very confused. And then this is where we go back into the fact versus fiction, right? And I think, you know, this current 2021 legislative session, we have some legislation that would fund a direct appropriation from our general fund. So this is taxpayer dollars to be able to fund what is known as crisis pregnancy centers. And I think if you just look at the term itself, right, it suggests, oh yeah, we absolutely need to be supporting women there. But what we see, and this is a practice throughout Texas and other southern states across the nation, that ultimately we get in the way of a woman having all of her disposals of her options. If motherhood, you know, is something that is suddenly going to be a part of her perspective, these crisis pregnancy centers, they're meant to belittle women in their health making decisions. Yep. They're meant to essentially track through marketing schemes and data platforms that exist now in this digital world to keep saying, your decision making is wrong, and this is the religious way to do it for you to. It's nonsense. And you know, it's like, why can't we fund existing programs that are like the 2-on-1 program here in Arizona that is meant to provide that direct linkage between not government but our private sector, the nonprofit sector that is there to help when we need it. Instead, you know, these government bureaucrats continue to expand government by creating these kind of things. And I just think this is the wrong way to do it. So, you know, fact versus fiction, I think, is what we go back to.
So you've run twice now, and you've consistently sought and celebrated the endorsement of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona. I think you've talked a lot about this, but why is this so important to you?
I think there are people close to me that have relied, women that have relied on Planned Parenthood services. And I think ultimately what they got was an unquestioned response, which is to say there was no stigma. This was birth control. This was STI prevention. And ultimately, it was a resource that Planned Parenthood was to their lives to be able to be where they're at today. And those women are thriving. They're contributing to our local economy. And they're, more than anything, people who are giving back because they know that there was an organization like Planned Parenthood there. So from a fundamental perspective of organizational strength, Planned Parenthood knows its clients. It is there when they need them, and we care no matter what, right? I was on the board for several years of the statewide nonprofit board, and I think I just have a unique understanding. But let's kind of strip out my direct experience. The folks who I think have led America to where we are at today of being a pioneering country of opportunity and equity and all of that, I mean, we have a lot of work to do, right? But I specifically remember in 2018, I was at a fundraiser, which of course is a mandatory part of working and for any office, you got to ask folks for money. And there was this wonderful 80-year-old woman who had recently come to Southern Arizona from New York. And I think, you know, it goes without question that a lot of our nation's movements have started in New York, Stonewall, yep. Marches, you know, all of that. And she's just like, Andres, I am sick and tired of marching.
Yeah.
I am sick and tired of having to put myself on the line. I'm 80 years old. I've been doing this my entire life. We need your next generation to keep doing that. And then you start to realize that, like, you know, it took me a year to run and announce for office in 2017, to win in 2018. Now I'm on a second term. And I wish more elected leaders know that this isn't a temporary commitment. This is generations on choice, on equity, on healthcare access. It has been a multi-generational commitment. And yet here we are dealing with an oppressive branch of governments and governments, plural, that continue to try to hold us back or roll back our progress. And that is not something that I think I can just sit quiet about. And it's why I'm doubling down on my commitment to being a representative voice for not only Planned Parenthood, but for the women and the men that know that if we want to tackle social justice, if we want to tackle racial inequity and healthcare disparities, what we've got to do is lift people up.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, we definitely thank and celebrate your support of us. It means a great deal. COVID-19 remains an ongoing concern, and you've spoken out about the pandemic from the beginning, helping to educate and inform the folks you represent, which is more than we can say for a lot of representatives across the country. What, in your opinion, remains vital in the fight against COVID? And when do you believe all Arizonans will have access to vaccines?
Well, I think that the pandemic absolutely put under a microscope the injustices of our world. For instance, in Southern Arizona, the legislative district that I represent had about 30 evictions per day.
Wow.
Prior to the pandemic. And so you think about, you know, the strangers that you walk by at the grocery store, and you easily will pass lots of folks never understanding their story, right? The other day, I was at the grocery store in Phoenix and saw what appeared to be, you know, just two friends doing what they do at the grocery store, mm-hmm. saying, we need this, we need that. Maybe about 30 minutes later, I'd already checked out. I was eating at a restaurant across the street in my car, because that's what legislators do, sexy life guys. We eat in our cars after going to the grocery store at 9 p.m. And these two folks are walking with a shopping cart to their home next to a wash. Outdoors, I think it was like 55 degrees that night. And then you're able to recognize the fact that, you know, as the governor talks about how great Arizona's economy is doing, we weathered the storm. We got through the pandemic. You know, we're on our way to administering 1.5 million doses. And the reality is back home that COVID-19 relief has been absolutely at the back burner of any priorities coming from this governor and from this Republican-led legislature. And unemployment relief has not happened. It's still the second lowest benefit weekly rate at $240 a month, a week, which is $960 a month. No action on that yet in terms of it being, you know, sent to the governor. COVID-19 dollars for rental assistance and mortgage assistance. No meaningful program other than federal dollars to support that effort. We still haven't fully restored funding to the Housing Trust Fund that we have money in the bank for. We have a $1 billion surplus to be right. able to do these things, but the governor doesn't want to touch them. And last, you know, but not least on the vaccine rollout, Ethan, it's a tremendous disparity that we're seeing right now with the total doses administered. I should acknowledge that the governor's Ducey is correct. Supply is limited, but it's unacceptable that of those 1.5 million doses, less than 10% have gone to our Latino neighbors, Latino loved ones, get them in our makeup throughout the state, almost 50% statewide. And more than anything, people of color are less than 20% of that 1.5. That includes our Black, Indigenous people of color in there. And so what does that tell us? It tells us that the folks who are reaching this vaccine have access to some privilege. It's they have access to internet, to a phone, to a laptop to be able to make these online appointments. Sometimes, you know, the governor will announce these 9 a.m. Distribution schedules. Go online at 9 a.m. We're releasing 21,000 appointments. Well, my constituent working double shift at night, you know, working at 9 a.m. and a 9 p.m. may not have the same access, right? And so how are we getting the vaccines to those communities in a culturally responsive way, giving folks access to transportation, having micro pods that allow, you know, a church in my district distributed 500 doses in less than 2 hours. There's a way to do this. I think, so it's a long answer, but I'm fired up about it because my constituency, Ethan, they just want to get by. You know, it's what I've been thinking about all day is that, because I think about my public service, I've lived through a lot of their experiences and I still, you know, I'm able to see people close to me go through those things. And there has to be better solutions for everyday families. And that's why we're so committed to continuing to uplift their voice.
Yeah. And I would honestly say if you weren't so fired up about it, there'd be a bigger problem. So we're really happy that you are. And
I mean, Ethan, in trying to get a vaccine for my mom, who has a number of pre-existing conditions, you know, I there's no reason why this should feel like you're trying to get a concert ticket to the latest and hottest Beyonce concert. Yep. That's what it felt like when I went on the Department of Health Services website one morning, right? And 6 minutes later, there's no availability. It's just like, it's crazy. This is not normal.
Yeah, that's not good. So last question, with such a stressful job, how do you make sure that you are practicing self-care? And what are the things that bring you joy and allow you to disconnect just a little bit from your work?
Well, I have no qualms about, and I've been very open about this since my time in office, is that I think that what's helped me go through lots of things is as part of my commitment to my self-care, I see a therapist every month. And I recognize the privilege that I have in having access to healthcare that allows me to have that monthly conversation. And it's the number one thing, I think, with any kind of behavioral health or mental health is like, well, what's wrong? What's the root issue? And it's just like, no, I want to talk through things, right? But the 99% of my conversations now with my therapist are about processing different conversations. It's like, it's strategy. It's like, it's no different than me going to yoga. Yeah. It's no different than me, you know, enjoying, you know, two or three glasses of wine and being able to be just relaxing on a Friday night. And I always preface that self-care, like go find a therapist. Cause I was told 4 years ago, you know, look, you come from a disadvantaged background. There's probably some things we got to work in there, but more than anything, anything you ever do in your life is always going to be criticized because of who you are, who you love, what you look like. And that's a lot of emotional and psychological trauma, ultimately, that you just have to get through. And I just, you know, I never think about it that way, but it's true. And so that's what I do. I go to my therapy and yeah, I run, I do all the things that are critical, but I more than anything, you know, I have to somewhat find fun in all of this, Ethan.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, when I talk to a constituent, who's going through a really difficult time, $13 in their bank account, trying to navigate our disastrous unemployment system here in Arizona. I'll do my best to remedy their issue, get the support that they need. But ultimately, you know, the smile at the end of the day for me is knowing that somebody feels as though they can pick up the phone. They have my cell phone number. I'll share it with everybody, you know, 520-301-6162. It's in the Arizona Daily Star. It's in the Arizona Daily Star. I give out my number to anyone and everyone. And lo and behold, I'll get those random phone calls that I hear you can help with this. And, you know, I just wish all lawmakers had that kind of transparency. We're everyday people working for a common cause.
Yeah, we'd be living in a much better world if that were the case. And going back to what you were saying about, you know, seeing a therapist, I think it shines a light on what a huge stigma there is around mental health because, you know, you tell people that you got a gym membership and, you know, they're celebrating you and saying, oh, that's so great for you. And you tell someone you're going to see a therapist, they're like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? You know, what's going on? You know?
Yeah. And even in that explanation, right? Like all you asked about, you was self-care. And I told you, I go see a therapist. And then I gave like a 2-minute response to all of it. Mm. So I'm still grasping with how to normalize that it's okay to go talk out emotions. I mean, look, I'm a Latino. I'm openly gay. There are things that I have been taught just on culture, not so much by my family. You just don't talk about certain things.
Right.
I talked to some of my best friends, most of them who are women who have gone through lots of things in their life, and they're silenced. They're told to not speak about their feelings or their emotional experiences. Sometimes it's meant to protect somebody else. And I just think, isn't that gross, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I think for me, it's just like, you know, where can we be open? And I think that's what brings everybody to Planned Parenthood ultimately, in whatever capacity, a volunteer that is super engaged, a donor who wants to ensure that we are electing leaders to be with us and be with our mission so that the healthcare delivery of our services are critical. But more than anything, just a regular everyday person, knowing that there is an advocate out there for them, standing up for what's right and saying you deserve access to anything that a man has, and more than that, anything that a person deserves, which is good healthcare, good elected leaders, good representation. And I'm a small part of that, Ethan. There are more than 2 million elected positions throughout the country. I may have that number wrong. I will acknowledge that, Ethan, but it's a large amount. And I'm just grateful, you know, for the opportunity to be here, and Planned Parenthood's leading the way throughout Arizona, and our day is coming.
Well, you know, we're really grateful for you, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. This has been great and incredibly informative, and it's definitely my honor to have had this time with you. And thanks to all of you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this, and if you did, we'll be posting new podcasts every month, so be on the lookout. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and subscribe on iTunes. See you next time.